Welcome back to the podcast that's all about band and not about band at all. Because in this rehearsal space, everyone has a seat, whether you play an instrument or not. Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to Band is Everything, and this is a really special episode. This is not only episode 60 of our podcast, but it is also episode 131 of the Growing Band Director podcast. That's right, this is a crossover episode. A couple months ago, Kyle Smith, the host of the Growing Band Director, reached out to us and said, let's sit down, have a conversation, and release the episode on both of our streams. So today we are releasing our episode, and next week on December 18th, you'll be able to listen to the same interview on the Growing Band Director podcast. We encourage you, if you haven't already liked or subscribed to Band is Everything, make sure to hit that button. Find us on every podcasting app or platform. But also, especially if you are a band director, if you've never listened to the Growing Band Director podcast, look for the green logo. So, this is our interview with Kyle as episode 60, a crossover episode with the Growing Band Director.
Do you dream of faraway places? Do you wish to see the world? So much of who we are is where we've been. Go discover new adventures. Create memories to last a lifetime. Grand Tours. Dream. Design. Discover.
Welcome back to the Growing Band Director Podcast. This is episode number 131. And I'm here with everybody on the Band is Everything podcast, episode number
60.
Yeah. Aaron and Brad, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Great to be here with you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're so glad to be with you as well.
I think that everybody who is on here listening needs to go on YouTube just to see all of Aaron's shoes. That's pretty amazing. Yeah,
they are fun. I do like my shoes. So, we just got new photos done, and Brad was shocked that we did a shoe photo. I'm like, how can you be shocked?
I should have known better. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I would have cleaned my shoes, but the pictures turned out great anyway. So
they are good. They are good.
I remember what I was gonna say. We're gonna introduce the podcast.
I was just gonna say, let's say, because this is really cool. First of all, we appreciate the invitation to do a crossover episode, but we'd love to tell our listeners or hear from you a little bit more about what your podcast is about, and we'd love to tell your listeners what our podcast is about, because they're definitely coming from the same place, but they definitely have two different sorts of formats.
Sure. Yeah. Why don't you guys go first?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, my name is Bradley Mariska.
And I'm Aaron Holmes.
And our podcast is called Band
is
Everything.
Everything.
Well, you guys have worked that out.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's not coming from the perspective of, you know, band should be everything or band should be your whole life. This is the classic thing we as band directors talk about all the time, that band is life. And the things that you learn in band are life skills. And there's really funny stories that apply to life regardless of whatever your occupation or career are. So we encourage people to listen to our podcast, whether they're band directors or not. As we like to say, there is...
it's a podcast space about band, but not about band at all.
That's right.
I did it.
Very good. And and in this rehearsal space...
Oh, that's it too. Yeah.
Yes, there is a place for you, whether you play an instrument or not. So our interviews are oftentimes with great musicians and band directors, but also there's a lot of times where Aaron and I just sit down and collaborate and commiserate about life and crazy things that happen at school, but aren't necessarily just about band. So again, that's Band is Everything. And we're really, really glad to be on your show today.
Yeah, it's quite an honor to be on your show. So thank you.
Likewise. Yeah, it's great.
Tell us about Growing Band Director.
Yeah. So it started about 2 years ago. My friend Jeff and I, who's recently passed away, we were talking about our program. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, we're two veteran teachers. He'd been teaching for 46 years and I've been teaching for 20 years. And we're talking about things that we understand, but a lot of other teachers probably would like to hear about. So then I brought it up to him. Why don't we just make a podcast out of this? And Ray Kroc is the founder of McDonald's. And he had this quote that said, if you're green, you're growing, and you're ripe, you're rot. So I took that just with the growth mindset mentality. And every episode is meant to be about band. and in that episode, we're trying to give people practical things that they can do through the guests or through my experience, whether it be programming or fixing clarinet embouchures or tuning the tubas or whatever. So people can listen for a little bit, or they can listen to the whole thing and hopefully get something that will help them no matter the level of their band. And what I love about the podcast thing for all podcasts is it's just an amazing living document of any knowledge that you want to get. You know, I mean, you can go back and they're all saved, and it's like hours and hours and thousands of hours of professional development that you can get on any subject.
Yeah. So, that's what I really like about your podcast. And I want to tell the folks listening to our show, if you are a music educator, if you're a band director and you don't listen to The Growing Band Director, go find it, because the pedagogy that you cover in so many of your episodes is... doesn't matter if you've been teaching for 1 year or teaching for 30 years. My favorite series of episodes that you did was, they're probably almost a year old now, but you went through all the different grade levels of jazz band, big band repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so fantastic. And I would just put them on as I was like the hour before school, as I was doing some work. And I got to hear a whole bunch of great tunes, a lot of which I'd never heard before. And talking about why the pieces were great and why they worked. Like, these are proven pieces that you've taught before. And I loved the practical nature of it. And I want to just thank you for doing this and making those available, because I can always go back and listen to them.
Well, and that's the thing about pedagogy. I mean, when we're all in our 20 years of teaching now, and there's still so much we can learn. That's why we have the growth mindset. And so to be able to like even break things down into, what are those tricks again about clarinet embouchure? What else can I learn? What else? I mean, it's not always going to be the same thing for every single kid. So how can I help? How can I get better? So that's why it's so great to have a podcast like yours.
Well, and what's funny is that, like, obviously, I think we would all hope that we keep improving as teachers every day. So like, mm-hmm. Are you a better teacher than you were 5 years ago? Well, I hope so. Like, we all think that we are. But guess what? Your clarinet section might be worse than it was 5 years ago. And your trombone section might be better. Like, your band gets worse and better within. So you might not have to remember certain things about the clarinet right now. But in three years, you might need to remember that.
Such a good point.
It's just like, I don't have to worry about percussion sticking right now because they can play anything I put in front of them. Well, someday, you know, you might have to remember what right hand lead is.
Yeah. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about workload. I think, you know, here's a pet peeve of mine, and I don't know if I'm gonna make anybody mad here, but I feel like a lot of people come out of school to be a band director, but they're not willing to put in the work to build in a really good program. And I think, and I'm definitely for life balance. Like, I'm all about, like, I don't rehearse my marching band past 5:30. I'm always at home for dinner with my kids. That's me personally. But I also work really hard in my program to help build it a lot. And I think there's a lot of people who are leaving school who are thinking more about me time than, like, before they're even married or have kids, rather than maybe, you know, building your program to be what it should be. So, like, I'm curious to hear from you guys.
Yeah. Well, I can let Brad kind of start this too, but I right now I'm kind of frustrated with a lot of things in that regard, because I believe in work-life balance too. I've got three kids. I've got a husband that coaches he's a two sport head coach. Like, our lives are really busy, but I know what kind of work it takes in order to make a successful program, and collaboration and doing the things and the hard work that it takes to get there. And I'm still willing to do that work. And then when I hear from other people that they're like, oh, I don't want to do that because that's too much work. Oof, that's tough for me to, and I get that everybody's mm-hmm. level of busy is in their own, you know, it's your perception is your reality. Right. But at the same time, like, you can't just give up on something because you don't know how to fix that problem. Our job is to teach kids how to solve problems and to work through that. So I don't know, Brad, you can add in more and then.
Well, yeah, I mean, Aaron and I have talked about this a lot and there's a lot to unpack here, but I think the first thing that, we notice is that there are a lot of, I don't know if they're music educators or future music educators who are in college or prospective music educators who maybe join this career path for the wrong reason. And I don't mean that in a really negative way. I actually mean it in a really positive way, in the sense that when they were in school, whether it was middle school, high school, college, band was their favorite thing. It was their favorite class. It was their favorite teacher. Playing an instrument or playing in an ensemble was the highlight of their day. And that's super awesome. It should be. That should always be our goal. We should. I get up every day wanting to go to school to make band be a highlight of the day for some student, hopefully lots of students. But there's a big difference between band being your favorite class or the favorite thing that you do and it being
your life,
a career.
Yeah.
Because the life of a band director, and it doesn't matter if you're teaching elementary, middle, high school, college, it is a lot of work. At the high school level, it's a ton of evenings and weekends and summers. At the middle school level, you go home physically exhausted at the end of the day, right? And I think a lot of people don't realize that because nobody ever talks about how much time you're going to spend on administrative tasks. No one's going to talk about how much time you're going to stand at the photocopier. No one talks about how much time you're going to spend in professional development sessions and meetings, sending emails to parents. No one ever talks about all of the instruments that you're going to need to repair and all of the planning it takes to send your kids to a festival or a competition. And it's one of those things that, like you said, we're all for work-life balance. But at the end of the day, this is not a 9-to-5 job. It's never been a 9-to-5 job, and it never will be a 9-to-5 job. And you have to know that going into it. It doesn't make it right or wrong. It doesn't make it fair or unfair. It just is what it is. And people who find that surprising either weren't trained well or weren't paying attention during their training.
Yeah, there were some things I was thinking about as you're like, my wife will say this too, because she's a great middle school teacher and I'm lucky that she's in my district. So like I get all of her students.
That's awesome.
We're always on.
Always.
When you're in the band room, not only are you busy every minute of the entire day. I mean, if you're lucky, you sit down for 5 minutes to use, to eat. But we're always on. When we're in rehearsal, you're on live with all the kids playing. Like, you're not going, okay, now we're going to take 20 minutes and work on your trumpet homework. Like, it's not that way.
It's not a math class where they've got that time.
Do have the chance to teach a piano lab class, it's like, oh, this is amazing. Like, you have that flexibility to, take a breath. So yeah, we're always on. And Jeff used to say all the time, do you want to be good or not? Do you want your program to be good? Because you can get the job and keep the job and just have a poor program, but you have to be willing to put in that effort.
For sure. And not only the things that you deal with on a daily basis, but then bigger picture programming, no matter if you're at the elementary level, middle school or high school, you've got to be collaborative in a full big picture program. And that's where you think too, I'm on this island. And sometimes you're running the whole program by yourself. I mean, we're in a high school of 2,200 kids. We have two middle schools and five elementary schools. So we've got big programs all over the place. That's a lot of communication to have, to collaborate with concerts and build bridging mentorship, all the things that we've got going on within our program. And that's those relationships. But I think the other big thing too, is that, especially at the high school level, most of us are dealing with 9th through 12th graders, and those kids know us and they find a safe space in our band spaces, right? That's just the way it is. Band, choir, orchestra, they find that home place. And then now we're dealing so much more with the emotional side of kids and this, I don't want to say oversharing, but sometimes it is oversharing. Yep. On, you know, like I always felt close to my band director, but the things that I hear now as a band director, there's no way I would have ever said that. So, I mean, teaching is so different. And maybe the kids, if I use quotes today, going into music education, maybe they're used to that. It won't be like for us. Sometimes it's just draining. Like we rehearse at night for marching band. Our program is extracurricular. Mm-hmm. So when we're done at rehearsal at 9 o'clock, and then I still have to sit in a room and work out the problems with the kid, you know, like if they're fighting within the section or whatever the case is at the time, it's draining. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how do you sustain that?
And think about it. This is going to sound bad because I think every kid's a good kid deep down, right? And there's some kids mm-hmm. who have issues and some don't, but like mm-hmm. the kids choose to be there. Like right. imagine if you had to teach English,
right?
Where the kids have to be there and they're forced to be in your class. Like at least we get to teach the kids who want to be there.
100%.
But with that comes like a greater responsibility in terms of
okay, Batman.
Okay.
Spider-Man.
With great power comes great responsibility. but because I don't presume to, okay, this is, I gotta make sure I word this correctly because I don't want to sound insensitive or cynical.
Right. Right.
But
right.
If every kid in our classroom was forced to be there, not by choice, we wouldn't have to care as much about them. Now, and that is not to say that teachers that are in gen ed core classes don't care, because we work with some absolutely amazing, like a lot of really amazing math, science, English teachers. But they don't have to worry about job security, and they don't have to worry about if this kid doesn't like my class or like me, that they're going to quit and my enrollment goes down. Like the responsibility of nurturing a relationship with a kid through middle school or high school or beyond, and knowing that not only the vitality of your program depends upon that, but also their emotional, social well-being and academic success in the area of music depends upon you investing in them in return. That is a lot of responsibility.
Heavy.
It's really heavy. And it's like, I think post-COVID especially, that's maybe what's been wearing down music educators the most. I don't mind doing the hard work. I mean, I complain about standing at the photocopier and I complain about fixing instruments, but like that's just part of the job and it's always been part of the job. But these really difficult conversations with kids who are struggling with anxiety and depression and all of this, these are conversations I didn't have with kids 20 years ago. So it's forcing me to become a different, better type of music educator.
Think about,
yeah, and go ahead.
I'm sorry, just it's in my head. Like, think about the test, quote unquote. Think about our performances. Like, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to invite everybody to come on an evening where we've been out all day and the kids are tired, and we're going to have them dress up. We're going to put them under really hot, shiny lights. And we're going to have them. It doesn't matter if they understand it. Can they do it? And it doesn't matter if they've done it for the last 6 weeks. They have to do it right now. And not only do they have to do it, but it's going to be live in front of their parents, and we're going to record it and maybe put it on YouTube. And then they also have to do it together simultaneously at the same time.
And only once.
Yeah. And if you get it 95%, it's going to sound terrible. Right. I mean, it's like we forget that we have the highest of standards in what we're asking our kids to do. So for me, that's one of my gospels, is like under programming. Not too easy, but like program to a point where kids can really succeed, not just chase the notes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a conversation we are constantly having, is that especially with groups that we don't know as well. Like we just had a conversation the other day with about like our ninth grade band. You know, we are about a third of the way into the school year right now, and we're still trying to figure out what this year's group of ninth graders are capable of.
Right.
And we keep throwing music at them and we're like, that piece is too easy. Ah, but that piece is too hard. And where is the middle ground? And it's interesting because it's not the same as last year's ninth grade band. And it's not the same as ninth graders 5 years ago. And I like to think of that as a positive, that we have the ability to find a different piece of music or a different genre or style or composer. But a lot, you know, going back to the example of teaching English, one of the beautiful things, maybe it's not totally beautiful, but it's like, you know, every ninth grader is going to read this book and they all have to read that book every year. Now, personally, I think that would get kind of old. I love the fact that we get to teach different music every year.
But yeah, you can also be a teacher.
Yeah, you can respond to not only their interest level, oh, these kids just aren't digging that piece, or, oh my gosh, they don't understand compound meter very well yet. Mm-hmm. Let's put that on the spring program and teach some more compound meter in the meantime and replace it with a piece that is a little bit easier rhythmically. That is an advantage, but does that require us to work harder? Yeah. But if you're willing to do the work, your kids will benefit from that.
Well, yeah. And then going back to the whole, like, this is not a 9-to-5 job. We have to be, and the teachers all know this anyway, no matter what kind of teacher you are, especially when you're in middle school. I taught middle school for a decade too, that you have to be able to punt. You have to be able to adapt to everything in your room, and we have to meet kids where they're at. And I think pre-COVID, for those of us that are a tiny bit more seasoned as teachers, this is your level. I know this, I see this, I hear this, I know what you need. And now, even for some of us that are, like I said, that have been doing this for a while, we're like, you're throwing the pasta at the wall, trying to figure out what's going to stick. And that's a challenge, but it's a challenge that I'm willing to work hard for. And unfortunately, what I see, and sometimes the younger generation, I sound like an old person there, and I'm not trying to be offensive, I want you to work hard. I want you to understand what hard work is. And like, you can't give up on kids. And there's moments that we're like, I'm so frustrated, I should just quit. And like, I'm not going to quit, you know, and that's hard. And how do you talk yourself out of that? You know?
Yeah. We keep finding these gaps of knowledge, right? You're like, you hear them play something, so you can assume something. And then you say, what's the name of that note? And they're like, you know, and I had a piano class where, like, literally we were doing what I would consider to be a kindergarten. This is the easiest thing I could have you do right now. And there's kids who couldn't follow along and do it. Right. And I'm kind of done blaming COVID, even though I know that's part of it.
Yep. Nope.
It's just it's just, kids are just different. And you have to be able to, you know, what helps me a lot is being super proactive. And it started when my wife and I were getting ready to have our first child. Because I knew, okay, I want this program to keep growing and I want to do what I have to do as a teacher, but I might be out the entire next week because one of us has to be out because she's sick, and it's either our middle school teacher or our high school teacher, and we have no choices. So it's like, what do you have for rehearsals today? What do you have for rehearsals today? Okay, today it's going to be me. So I always try to like go, okay, if I had to miss the next week, we're still okay. So it kind of turned me into being pretty proactive. So when it comes to programming, I'll like plan the whole year. I plan about a year ahead. So like I have a concert that I just finished a couple weeks ago. I've kind of planned for that concert next year. Now, because I know the 11th graders through 8th graders, just because we've talked about it. Now, there's not a chance in heck that that's going to stay the same next year. But at least I have a program that I like. So then you're right. You're talking about, okay, this doesn't work for you. Let's find a new piece right now. I'm always changing, but I have a plan. And I've thought ahead of time. So to me, the being proactive is just huge because it allows you to kind of think back a little bit, order the music ahead of time. And then if you don't use it, you don't use it. But, you know, just being proactive just puts my mind at ease. It says, okay, I can be here and work. And if today explodes, that's fine. We're still going to be okay.
That's smart. I'm sure Brad would like me to be that way too.
we have like one of my favorite documents is a spreadsheet of program history and planning. And, you know, it goes back to as long as we've worked together, and it also looks forward. It not only has, you know, us sketching out all of the pieces for the current year, and then about halfway through the year, we put the following year on there. But then there's just a running big, long list at the bottom, like these are pieces to consider or go back and listen to. So definitely that planning piece is really, really important. And I, I've seen educators, band colleagues before who just, the concert ends and they go look in their library and they just sort of scramble and they're like, oh, I know this piece, and they pull it out and they pass it out the next day. And you're just not going to get as good of results, because if you plan ahead, you've taken the time to find the piece, whether it's in genre, style, tempo, key signature, meter, whatever it is. And like you said, you're going to end up swapping some things out. But if you start with a plan and you start with something that's balanced and educational, you're never going to go wrong.
I kind of look at it like sports teams would. Like, I'm a fan of the Patriots, and we're on some dark days right now. But you know, one
you,
thing that
you had a good run. You don't worry.
We're Vikings fans, so I mean, we're Vikings.
No
fans,
sympathy like... about. Like, yeah, you've won the championships. We haven't.
But what they say is, okay, we're going to draft this person because they're going to replace this person who's on our team, but they're better. Right. Yeah. So to me, when I hear a new piece, I'll go, I really like that, but I don't like it better for any of my bands than what we're going to do now. So I'll put it on a list. But if I go, oh, I really like that piece, and that's better than the ballad I was going to use. So you're out, you're onto this other list. And so to me, that's how it happens.
That's exactly how. Yep. That's how I think.
It's fun to do too. Like, oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to do this piece. I'm not waiting. I found it later, but I'm doing it now. And Brad gets that way for sure. It's super fun. Yeah.
You know, when we talk about the triangle of responsibility, to me, when we talk about like the teacher, the parent, the student, all having equal parts in things. And so many times, you know, as teachers, if we have a position where maybe the parents aren't involved, or maybe the kid is not trying, we as teachers try to take it all upon ourselves to make up for the whole triangle. And of course, we know we can't do that. But also, have you ever found, I don't want to hear from you guys, have you ever found that when you're in front of your band, when they sound great, you're pretty relaxed? Like your muscles are relaxed and you're enjoying it. When they sound awful, your muscles are all tight, your jaw is clenched, and you're like, what? Oh, if I relax, they still sound bad. Okay. So they can sound bad and I can be relaxed, and that helps me be a better teacher. Isn't that funny how that works?
It is. Yeah.
Well, I was just about to say, one thing I say to my ensembles fairly often is like, why am I working harder than all of you? Mm-hmm. And I realize the reason they don't sound good is because I'm actually trying to do too much and I'm getting in the way, or I'm giving them the excuse that, well, if I conduct really, really big, then they don't have to count.
Right.
If I cue every entrance, they will never do it naturally on their own. Like, When I conduct relaxed or step off the podium completely, that's actually when they sound their best, because all of a sudden then their focus and their listening is so much better.
Yeah, they're finally listening louder than they're playing, and that's what we want. But too often we're like, we got to be in that control. So yes, we just had Dr. Derek Bromey show up and like he was running the wind ensemble, and he was like, I'm not going to conduct you guys. And I'm like, oh, that's such a good thing to do. And like, I need to like step off the podium more and just let them do it. Cause then all of a sudden they're moving, they're listening, and then they're fixing their own intonation instead of me going, my ears, you know? So.
Well, it's a struggle though, because why did I become a band director? Cause I like to be the center of attention. So that's a me problem.
Is that just us? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I have found that, you know, that getting off the podium is huge, you know, and I use metronome a lot, but a lot of times without the metronome too, just off the podium, grab the score with you, walk through the band, walk behind the band, play the bass drum, whatever. It teaches the kids a lot, you know, you're a moving target, but when you're on the podium, make sure you're doing something that they need to watch. So I did interview Peter Boonshaft a couple of months ago. And one thing he was just talking about, things that like we all know, but making sure the stands are high enough, make sure they're turned and face you, make sure they have to watch. So I started this warm up that I almost never used to do, is like a B flat scale. Like I never included that in our warm up. It was always 1,000 other things, but now it's like the B flat scale, but it's different every single day. You're moving fast, you're moving slow, you're soft, you're checking them from the very beginning to make sure that you're doing that conductor student relationship and keeping your eyes on the kids, not on the music. Every time I see a picture of myself conducting and my eyes are down, I just hate it. And, you know, cause like we're staring at our score, but when you can look at the kids and make connections with them, when you're on the podium, that helps music come alive and you hear it differently. So I challenge people, next time you do a piece, just take the score off. As long as you can conduct the meters and you have an idea, like if the band is good enough, just conduct and have no music in front of you and just go with what you hear. And it's just, it's revealing because you hear the band totally different.
You really do, because I find myself like my ears can focus completely on the line that, I mean, all of us can, right? On the line that I'm watching, but then I'm not necessarily listening to everything else around me. And what's rehearsal for? To learn everything else that's going on, not just one part, just not just my part. And so, yeah, I think that's so valuable to do that. And trust yourself that you do know the music. I think so often we use the music as a crutch, and it's just, I got to just step back and stand up taller. Just like we're looking for our kids to be sitting up taller, have their stands up so that they can see and hear and feel everything else around us. We got to make sure that we do that too, not looking over the score. It's so important for us to know the music, obviously way better than anybody, but not use it as a crutch.
It is funny too, because like we always kill ourselves for looking down at the score too much, but yeah. I've seen pictures of like the most amazing conductors you've ever heard about, and they're looking at their score. So it's like, Okay, Leonard Bernstein did it too. So It's okay if I have
it's okay. It's okay. But it's good for us to get out of that comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
Well, and to communicate to your students what you're doing and why. I do this in jazz band a lot. And I tell students at the beginning of rehearsal, I say, I don't have my scores with me today. What am I going to be listening for? And it facilitates a really great conversation that like, you don't have to play every single note and rhythm perfectly, because even your director won't catch all of those mistakes if he's not looking at the score. But I will tell you, if you're not playing in the right style, if you're entrances aren't clean, if your releases aren't together, if the articulations aren't uniform, if there isn't energy in your performance. And those things are as important or more important than playing all the notes right and all the right notes and rhythms. So it really is educational as well. So it empowers the students, but it really, really gives them an opportunity to listen to the music at a higher level, because high school kids, middle school kids, like they're just, they think that playing the piece and mastering it is just being able to get all the notes and rhythms that are on their page. And once you get this is why I like what you were talking about making sure that you don't over program, because you can take a really easy piece of music and yeah, they might be able to play it, but can they play it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does it sound like the recording or their version of the recording, right?
Right.
Because kids, even as young as beginners, can sound good if they're taught well. I mean, people just think, oh, that's a complete mess for the first 4 years because they're just young. It's like, no, you know, they can sound really good. You were talking about listening in jazz band. I'm curious, do you have a method where you teach like every kid in the jazz band who they're listening to and whatever in the big band?
Yep.
And what is that?
Well, the lead players to start with, of course, they're going to play up to the lead players. And then, I mean, well, maybe not to start with, but the baseline for sure. But playing up to the lead parts, but you also have to listen to the lower sounds too. And, you know, bass trombone and bari sax and things like that. So it's quite the balance.
Yeah. I mean, listening to the middle and then listening back, I always tell my lead trumpet player, or especially with our younger ensembles, a lot of times we have two or three students on lead trumpet, and like you're the most important melodic part in the ensemble. And I think that's important too, melodic part, because we all know when we've had a jazz band rehearsal and the bass player is sick, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the bass player is by far the most important member of the rhythm section. And without that, you don't have a foundation. So the bottom is as important as the top. But when it comes down to learning
style,
and who's driving the bus, you got to listen to the middle, listen to your lead players, and then listen back. And that whoever's playing first trumpet has to know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's funny because the drummer plays time, and then the piano player and guitar player could be separate, but piano player plays harmony. The bass player is the time and the harmony, right? So that's sort of like in my brain logically why that is. So I guess guitar could serve as the same function if they're doing Freddie Green style. The way we do it is we have all the kids listen into their lead player, and then lead alto and lead trombone listen back to lead trumpet. And then lead trumpet is listening to drums. And then within the rhythm section, bass is listening to drums are listening to bass, bass listening to drums, and everybody else is listening into bass and drums as well. And then Jeff even had an idea. He used to, all the years ago, he would actually have two bass amps. He'd have one where it normally is, and he would daisy chain another one on the left side of the band.
I love that.
Because he said a lot of times his kids couldn't hear the bass. And so now I haven't started doing that, but I'll ask my kids in a performance, or like, can you guys hear? It sounds like you can't hear. No, I can't hear the bass at all. Okay, well, let's figure out what we need to do. Because you're right. If you can't hear the bass, I was just reading and covering a part with our big band yesterday after school. And I find myself just listening to bass and drums. I wasn't listening back to lead trumpet. Well, because I'm better than him, but you know, it's one of those things.
It's a trumpet player thing.
Yeah, that's how we do it anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good though too. Like it's interesting to listen to. Like I've got a really good jazz one this year, but most of them are like, I graduated almost my entire trumpet section last year, my entire trombone section, right, Brad? Yep. You know, things like that. And so it's a learning process we have three, enough for four jazz ensembles that are, it's a curricular part of our day. And so they're getting a lot of jazz. We meet for an hour every single day. And but when you're coming together, and like, especially like this first trimester of trying to find where you fit into everything, even in a, you know, traditional, you know, 18, 19 piece jazz band, it's very interesting to see like who's going to take the lead and then who doesn't, and how we teach them how to listen up to that. It's a lot.
What's so important is you said it, like you had all these kids graduate, but guess what? You knew they were going to graduate like ahead of time. So I bet you were teaching all the levels of the kids at your best, right?
Yeah.
The amount of people who teach the top band and they kind of like throw the other band under the rug and like, no,
well, her colleague who teaches jazz too, he's really good. Really good.
It's smart. True. He is really good. Yeah.
Right. But like it even goes down further. Like people think the elementary band isn't as important. Well, like that's your win ensemble in 6 years.
You're, yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you need to teach every kid, no matter the complexity of the music, to the best that you can, so that you never really have to rebuild is the hope. It's like you might go down in trumpets, but then you're going to go up in saxophones. But you've planned ahead. Some people look and they go, oh my gosh, my trumpets are gone. Well, yeah. Where have you been the last 4 years? Like you knew they were.
Have you not been paying attention? Well, and I'll sit there right now, and when we finally get to concerts, and I can just take a step backwards and really listen to like Brad's, you know, symphonic band and jazz two and things, and I'm like, okay, I see you, jazz one, wind ensemble, jazz one, wind, you know, and just kind of listen louder than I normally do on an every single day basis. And that's kind of fun to see, like, all right, I wonder who's going to step up. Cause what I think might happen, not necessarily does happen when it comes down to, you know, chair or band placements.
Yeah. Cause a lot of times the chair placement ends up being more about their character and their work ethic than their actual natural ability. So this kid that right now you think is your best player forever, well, in 6 months, that kid's going to quit cause they're gone. But this kid who's home practicing, who you don't think a lot about, is just going to get better and better. By the time they're a sophomore, they're going to be an all-state.
Well, it's hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
And I was going to say too, Brad, is that sometimes we get inside of our own bubble, because going back to that whole being super busy and it being in the eye of the beholder. Yes, we're all really busy and we all have our own things, but if we get outside of our bubble and be like, okay, like you said, that collaboration that, okay, we need some double reeds coming in. How can we make sure that's the thing for the future, so that there are bassoons in the wind ensemble and things like that? And I think people have a tendency to be like, I'm so overwhelmed, and they don't know how to take a step back to see, you know, the whole forest. You know, a lot of times we want to see the forest through the trees, but sometimes we have to take a step back and be like, you know what, grand scheme of things, this isn't that hard to solve, but I need to take the time to do that.
One thing I've been doing more this year is we're talking about the listening thing, is using the term trios in a wind ensemble setting. So like the kid on either side of you and you are a trio, or the kid behind you and next to you are a trio. And just saying, taking a simple passage and saying, okay, we're going to play these eight measures, but I want you to just play an even with your trio. So, and it's like instantly their balance and blend is better. And it's not a hard thing to do, and you can do it with any level. So we were talking about listening, and I wanted to mention that.
I like that.
I'm writing it down.
All right. I contributed something. A question. So we have a saxophone player in the room. Aaron.
Yes.
If we're talking about saxophone, what is like, so you have a band director in front of you who needs like a key tip about saxophone. What is like the biggest common thing that you see that you could fix, that you would fix on every saxophone player if you could?
Not doing C sharp, just open keys. Yep. You've got to find alternate keys for that C sharp and completely changing your embouchure, because that note is just disgusting. Like C sharp on the staff, third space. Yeah.
And that note is in saxophone music all the time.
Yeah, music is, yeah, it's gross. So yeah, absolutely. Playing C sharp and having alternate keys for that. So whether you're using the octave key and your G finger to offset that, or your middle side key to help soften that tone, because it's sometimes you can get it in tune, but your tone quality is, because it's just so open, it's just icky. So that's one of my biggest things that I can go in and help sound wise with that. And then just thinking about what your tongue is doing inside your mouth. And it's hard for kids to visualize that, you know, don't we all wish we had x-ray machines or whatever, but like your tongue placement will really affect how you sound too. And that's something that if we don't learn that at a younger age, it's really hard to change. And I actually had the way that I was tonguing, I didn't get that fixed until I was in college. Mm-hmm. And oh, that was hard to change after so many years of playing a certain way.
Well, it's funny because that tongue placement is the same. It's the same for every instrument. Not that it's identical, but like if you play the trombone and change your tongue position. So like, Bradley, I'm going to ask you the same question. Yeah. Trombone, like what would you change?
Well, it's just a characteristic tone. And I think it's because of the size of the mouthpiece. When most students first learn trombone or baritone as a beginner, the mouthpiece is honestly like too big for their face, right? So they develop two bad habits. The first one is what I call kissing the mouthpiece. They allow their lips to come inside the mouthpiece. They should be flat.
Yep.
And the other thing that happens also, because of the size of the mouthpiece and because a lot of times as a beginner, we don't really talk enough about the volume and clarity of air that is required to play a larger instrument like low brass, their teeth are too close together. The jaw is too tight and too high. And when students come to me in ninth grade, I see that they're still playing in this way, and they can't produce a clear characteristic tone quality or play at a dynamic level that is necessary for maturing players. So they have to physically drop that jaw, open up, and then they need to retrain their embouchure so that the lips stay flat and don't, you know, kiss the mouthpiece, because it's very easy to buzz the mouthpiece and have those lips come forward and it just sounds terrible. And if that's the only sound they've ever known, they don't even know that it's wrong.
So do you guys play for your bands?
I play a lot in front of bands. Yeah. I play all the instruments.
I do woodwinds mostly. I don't really touch a lot of brass anymore.
Middle school is different from high school too.
Yeah.
But
right.
We had Phil Snedeker up, who is a trumpet teacher in, I forget, Yale or something. He has a book that I played in college, and he was up just, I had nothing to do with it, but he was in my school giving a lesson to a kid. And I just walked by and I was like, thank you for doing the lesson. And he looked at the podium and my trumpet was like still out next to the podium. He said, you must be a fantastic teacher. I was like, first of all, thank you. But hearing from you, I said, why? He said, well, your instrument's out. Like the amount of people who don't play with or for their kids, because we ignore so much of what things are supposed to sound like, because we want them to read. Yes. But like there's, you can say so much by just going do dot dot on your horn rather than the explanation of it. So I encourage people to have their horns, especially if you play the trumpet or the trombone, because they're better than everything else.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's accurate.
That's fine.
Oh, I played alto sax at pep band last night.
If you have to say it, fellas, I'm not sure it's true.
However, only one of us is presenting at Midwest this year, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, here's where I mute my microphone and go get a Diet Coke.
He's just saying that because he's already heard the presentation twice now. Is that right? Oh, he's literally going to get a Diet Coke. That's
fine. Can you give us the overview?
Yes. This presentation, I'm doing this with Dr. Paul Booty. He is a professor. Well, now he's the chair of the department at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. Fun fact, he's also a band parent of ours. So I've taught all four of his kids now. And the last one's coming through now. And we were hanging out and we were talking about why teach? Why now of all times? Why are, you know, as a college professor, he's like, why are we doing this? Why are people moving into this? And so we started talking and a couple months later, and he's like, do you want to put this together? And I was like, I actually do. Like, I really do. Cause I want to be an inspiration for, yes, why should we teach? Why now should we teach out of all of this, you know, that's going on in the world? Why should we do this? And then how do we do this? You know, it's not just about like the brand new people coming into the session or into education, but it's also all of us that have been doing this for a long time or in the middle of things and whatever else. And so we presented at the Wisconsin Music Educators Association and then the Minnesota one last year and submitted for Midwest, and we were accepted. And I'm so excited because I want to be in a situation where I'm always authentic and honest, organic, that I'm going to present this, but these are real life things that we're facing, and how do we get through them? And we go back to the why. Why do we do what we do? And why we do it matters. And so a lot of my teaching, you know, it always, when I first started teaching, it was like the thing for a lot of us, like, I got to put on a good concert. That's why I'm going to do this. You know, I want to make the kids feel the way that I did about music, of course. Right. But then when I first started teaching, I was like, oh, I got to put on a good concert. I got to put on a good concert. And now my why has changed so much because, again, still, it's always still about the kids, but I love the process and watching them develop and grow. And then it just turns into, I don't stress out about concerts anymore. I don't, because if you've prepared them well, if they've prepared themselves well, if you taught them, and I think in a bigger sense too, like education, especially music education, is so much bigger than notes and rhythms than it ever has been before. And we've always had that as music educators. We know that all the skills that it hits in life. That's why band is everything. You know, it's a podcast about band, but it's not about band, those things. But yeah, so we're gonna do that, and I'm super proud of the fact that I get to perform or I get to present at Midwest. I never, who thinks that they're going to get to do that? It's beyond my wildest dreams. So
that's so awesome. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. The concert, I need you on record. Just every time I'm driving to a concert, be like, relax. You've taught them for the last 6 weeks. They're going to be fine.
Yeah.
They're going to be better than the dress rehearsal.
Oh, they always are. I'm always like, this is where you make the mistakes. Yep. Make it the day of the concert, whatever. You're going to be great tonight, as long as you trust yourself. And that's the thing, like, we have to show them that we trust them, and we're all going to make mistakes. I'm vulnerable every single day on the podium. And like, folks, we got to do that again for me. If we could do that, you know, I messed up, or they'll giggle at me because I missed a meter or whatever, because I was so like into things and I forgot about that. And when they can keep going, that means I'm doing the right things, that they know this literature so well, and they're feeling it, that they don't need me.
Well, I was going to say, I used to get really stressed out about concerts. And I was like, oh, it's because I need my students to know what a big deal this is. And then, you know, as I became a more mature educator, I realized, well, all of that stress and anxiety, they saw it and began to embody it themselves. And it's important for me to stay stress-free as possible and relaxed as possible at concerts, because the students then will be as well, because they're going to be nervous either way. We don't need to make them more nervous.
Well, 100%. I mean, how we react to things, whether we're, you know, we've got our own children or our students seeing the truck break down on the way to a festival, you have to respond the way that makes people feel comfortable. You can deal with this stuff, but I always say it's like, you've got to be like a duck on the water. You're just nice and calm on top, but that's just awesome. Underneath fast pedaling, you know? So
that's awesome. I taught with a man named Phil Rich for about 15 years. And one thing he always strove for, and I use it all the time still, is he's like, a lot of bands will rehearse all loosey goosey. They rehearse and they're not really trying. They're kind of like relaxed and whatever. And like, stuff is everywhere. And you can tell there's no attention to detail. Then they get to the performance and they get super tight And then they try to be perfect and it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we, my groups always want to strive for the opposite. We want to work really hard in performance. I mean, in rehearsal, but then when you get to performance, relax, like, don't even worry about it. Just in, try to entertain the audience. And if you can entertain the audience with all the work you've done, you usually have a pretty good concert experience.
Yeah. One of our mantras, is that we've talked a lot about over the last few years is about the process. And we've stopped worrying about the product. Now, I want to clarify, that does not mean that we don't care about the product, and it doesn't mean that we have a low standard for the product, but teaching students that if they do the process correctly and they invest themselves in the process, the product will always be good and always be something they can be really proud of. Because if you do all the work on the back end, the end result will have been worth it and it will be quality.
Well, and we always say this too, that students deserve our excellence. I deserve excellence. They deserve to demand it from me. I deserve to demand it from them. That doesn't mean, again, going back to over-programming by any means, but like, they deserve that in life, whether it's going to be a romantic relationship, a friendship. We all have to give our absolute best in our relationships. And I want to do that for the music too. And they to have a sense of pride, so that they know that they can do hard things. They can achieve a lot in life, whether it's getting that passage in the music or finding a romantic relationship that makes them feel amazing as humans and not have discomfort.
And it's funny because, like, if you think of some people throw away days, they're like, we'll start trying next week or whatever. It's like, no, as a teacher, if you can, like, every single day you're trying to do the best that you can do, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
You know, just don't throw it away. Like, spend every day and every minute the best, you know, obviously there's times to be down, but like, don't waste this week. Like, do as much as you can to get ahead.
Well, and I think, you know, society right now is pretty bad on teachers, that we're not working very hard. We're not doing enough for our kids. We're not blah, 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 blah. And like, you need to come into these classrooms and see that there's accountability and the excellence that's surrounding all of us, because we do care. And we are demanding of that accountability and consistency. And that's what bands are. So
Schmidt Music is your trusted resource for all things band and orchestra. Their team of instrument specialists are experts in their craft and happy to help with everything from guiding students as they select a step-up instrument, presenting master classes, and more. The specialty shops at Schmidt Music carry an extensive selection of instruments from the finest brands in the world for every level of player, all of which can be accessed through your local Schmidt Music store. From do re mi's to symphonies, Schmidt Music has got you covered every step of the way. All right. So one of the segments that we like to do, especially when we're talking with a great music guest, band director, is what's on your stand. You have a minute to tell us about a really cool piece of music that you love or your students love that you'd like to tell other band directors about.
So recently I did an episode, I forget the number, but it was on the music of Douglas Wagner, who's arranged all these amazing masterworks for younger bands. And there's one I did last year, and I'm going to throw two in because it's by the same arranger. Last year we did the Children's March version that he did. And then this year we're going to be doing American Salute, which again, these are, you know, I've had bands play both, but right now my bands are not going to play either one of those, but they're written so well at the grade 3, 3.5 level. And yes, they're a little bit different, but that's amazing music, and you get to expose your kids to these masterworks. So for me, it's American Salute by Morton Gould, arranged by Douglas Wagner.
Awesome. Classic. I can't wait to check it out, because
It's a classic, but I don't know that arrangement.
I heard it. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. That's cool.
Okay. So I'm not going to talk a lot about my piece because I probably don't need to. Well, maybe I do for the young kids, you know, because I'm an old lady now, but we're going to do... because our wind ensemble is also performing at our state convention in February, and we're gonna play Air for Band by Frank Erickson. So, and I'm really excited about that. I haven't touched that piece in I don't know how many years. So, I'm so excited to get working on that.
One of my friends is Terry White, who's a great, great arranger. And he did those episodes you mentioned earlier with me.
Yeah.
And he says a lot of young teachers have no idea Frank Erickson ever existed, that his music is great.
Yeah.
I had a friend a few years ago, band colleague, and he said every band director in the country should go out and buy a copy of Air for Band, even if it's in your library, just to make sure it stays in print because of that. Because some of these young kids like don't know it. And it was so important. I mean, when we sight read this in band, I usually give like a 30-minute lecture to the students about the history of the piece and why it was written and why it was important.
He's a musicologist.
But yeah. That's the musicology degree in me talking. But, you know, since we talked about American Salute and Air for Band, two stone cold classics for band, I'm also going to go old school.
With
a march that I'm guessing a lot of band directors have never heard of before. And it's called the Iowa Band Law March by Carl King. And it's very playable. It's a grade 3 classic march. It was published in 1924. So this is the centennial of the piece, which is one of the reasons why it's on our stand. We're going to play it with our tour band that's going to Spain in March. And it is available. It is still in print by Barnhouse. Check out the Iowa Band Law March by Carl King.
And then go research why that piece was created.
I could also give a 30-minute lecture about the Iowa Band
Law. Kyle doesn't have time right now.
But yes, I know we all have.
You can have Brad come in as your guest and do all this musicology.
We can do a whole episode. We'll just talk about Air for Band and Iowa Band Law March. It'll be
one reason I love Carl King is that because he left to join the circus. And at 17,
literally,
podium player. So you can always tell kids it was written by somebody who quit school.
A dropout. He literally ran away and joined the circus.
All right. Well, thank you guys. This has been a lot of fun.
So much fun.
Thank you. And we will see you next time.